Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 9 of the BFG podcast. And, we've got a lot to talk about today. We are going to, for whatever reason, review the Happy Time Murders.
I mean, we don't have to.
But we do.
We could just pretend that doesn't exist.
We could, but we're not going to because we'll talk about a tradition that we have. I don't know if we mentioned it before.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that one. A little thing this past week on Tuesday, August 25th, a little show called Power Rangers just celebrated 25 years.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, me neither. So we're going to talk...
Why are we talking about it?
Because it's our show. We can talk about whatever we want. So we're going to talk the 25th anniversary. We're going to talk Shattered Grid, the comic just finished that storyline. We're going to talk... Oh, we're just going to talk a bunch of Power Rangers stuff. We are also going to talk... September 1st for me starts the Holiday Glutton. So September 1st, which is today, the day we're recording it, you know, we're going to talk... more video games that we're excited about coming out this year, you know, after E3 kind of ended and more release dates came. And we also got some question and answers that we're going to answer today as well. So we've got a good show for you guys today. So just to start out, Tyler, what is going on September 1st? 4 months left in 2018. It feels like just yesterday it was January. Now it's September. Football season's coming. Holidays are coming. Fall's coming, but we live in Florida, so fall's not going to come until like November. What's going on?
Okay, well, first and foremost, we signed our notice to vacate here at the apartment. So we got, like, approximately two more months here, and then we're house hunting now, but in the meantime, we might be moving back in with Haven's parents just for, like, a month or two, and, you know, if we haven't finalized yet, or if we haven't found the home we want yet, something like that. So that will, that'll be changing. In theory, come like November, you might see us in a different space. We'll be, you know, tucked in the back of a house for maybe a month or two. Or
it
might
actually be cool in there because I've been telling Tyler since we started this podcast to get a freaking fan in here. And no fan. But continue.
And like either way, you know, if it ends up being our house, like Haven and I, then we'll have like an office space in there where we'll be recording. And if... it turns out that we are staying with her parents for a month or two, then we'll be recording from there till we find the house we want. But point being, we've got like 2 months left here. So we'll be recording, maybe three or four more episodes here before a transitional phase.
So think of it like this. Tyler is more concerned about making sure we keep the show bi-weekly than he is about keeping a house. So that's for you guys.
That's all for you.
That's all for you. But
The next part of that, I don't know if it's ever actually been featured, which I need to do a video and put it like up on at least the YouTube channel or something. Due to our impending move, we might also be looking at a change of desks, which if I think we've mentioned it before, but I am just super proud of my computer desk. It is my computer and Haven's computer built into a giant glass top desk. And so you can see the lights changing color. We've got like the LED strip all the way around and you can see the computer's running. We got like a statue in the middle, a Batman statue in the middle. We got like plenty of storage and everything. And you know, my dad and I built it ourselves. We found the glass. The glass is actually a dining room table glass top. And we built the desk around the glass, like to the dimensions of the glass. And I'm super proud of this desk. I think we did really good. But just for practicality's sake, I don't know if it's going to be moving with us. So it's kind of a sad thing because, like I said, I'm super proud of it. And I think it's probably the most beautiful thing that I own. But it's just, it is a huge monster of a piece of furniture. And, you know, it's a whole lot easier to move a couple of computer towers and some monitors than it is to disassemble this desk and move it to a new location and rebuild the desk.
Absolutely.
Which we built it in like 6 pieces, so you could disassemble it and put it back together with minimal wear and tear. So it's not as bad as it sounds, but still it's a big enough and hefty enough piece of furniture that I don't know if it's going to make the transition with us. So I'm going to try to get some video and pictures of it to remember it before it goes to that big old,
yes,
you know,
and it's beautiful.
Wood pile in the sky.
It is a beautiful desk. I know we're sitting here talking about desks, but this one's, you know,
it's got nice. A lot of blood, sweat, tears, and love in it.
And Joker. Yeah. Batman. Yeah. He's in the center. You guys can't see it, but he's down over there.
Yeah, and like I said, I'll try to get a video and toss it up if you guys are interested. Just kind of to show you what I've been working with the last year or two. So it's kind of a bittersweet thing, because it does mean we're moving up. You know, we're getting a home and we're moving on to bigger and better accommodations.
That's right.
But at the same time, it means that this was like a big project. I love building computers and I love modding computers. And the desk PC build was a really big deal to me. And my dad and I spent months working on it because it was one of those things that I had wanted to do for years. And I finally put down, you know, the money and the time to make it happen. And so that phase is coming to a close. So it's kind of a bittersweet thing. But so anyway, there's that. We're going to be moving soon. The desk might be going, so we might be kind of upgrading our station a little bit. I think those are the big things right now.
Okay.
Is the moving thing is kind of on my mind.
Oh yeah, that one's the big one for you right now. So, so what's going on in my world? You know, I really wish I could sit here and say, you know, I've got so many exciting things going on, but I really don't right now. you know, obviously just kicking back, playing some games, getting ready for the NFL season to start up. So, you know, Todd and I are working on a new schedule to make sure that we do this every other week. Mm-hmm. Getting ready for Spider-Man, which comes out at the time of this recording next Friday, mm-hmm. which I'm very excited for that one. I'll be locked away.
I'm going back and forth. I'm really excited for it, and I think it's going to be great. But just, again, for the sake of us moving soon and trying to make sure we can make a down payment on a house, I'm kind of going back and forth about whether to make my purchase right now. So I might leave it, hopefully, because I'll get another paycheck in before our next podcast.
Yes.
So worst case scenario, maybe I can pick it up like the Thursday or Friday before we record again. So maybe I can get like a day or two's impressions out of it. So I'll have something to talk about. But I'm thinking I might put it off at least a little bit, maybe a week or two. Or I might red box it. I don't know yet. We'll see. But right now, I'm on the fence about whether to try to keep my pre-order or let it go until we've got a little bit more cash flow.
It's one of those things that's going to be an impulse buy for you. Mm-hmm. So what else is going on? You know, nothing really much more with me. You know, I've been working in my storage shed recently. You know, Tyler and Haven actually came down and saw it the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a guy come down and pick up a lot of stuff for me. So, Robert, shout out to you. I appreciate you helping me empty out quite a bit of it. But other than that, you know, not really much going on. You know, usually August is kind of a slower month. I know this month, actually, I remembered on my way here, I want to say it's September 23rd or 22nd or 20, sometime in the 20s in September, I'll be heading down to Tampa again for Tampa Bay MegaCon. And, you know, I'll finally get to meet my man crush and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, hopefully, if his line isn't too terribly long and he doesn't have to miss it for any reason. So I'm excited about that. I mean, you know, I'm sure in that episode I'll make sure to talk about that, the experience there. Other than that, just getting ready for holidays and ready for cooler weather, which, you know, like I said in the intro, I'm in Florida, so it won't be until November. Mm-hmm. But this is my favorite time of year. It really is. And we're going to get into it when we get into the holiday glutton, because we want to go ahead and torture ourselves first, I think, and that's by perfect segue out of the introduction. And we're going to talk about a movie called Happy Time Murders. And for those... I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what if we just say, like, it's really bad and move on? Instead of actually reviewing it, just say, don't go watch it. And then we can get out.
Well, Get Out is also apparently a good movie.
Get Out is a really good movie. I would say if you're on the fence, if you're sitting at home thinking, I can watch The Happy Time Murders or I can watch Get Out, definitely watch Get Out. Those are two movies that I can clearly give one recommendation. But I have a feeling those are not going to be the only two options.
No. you see, I don't know if we've mentioned this before on the podcast, which you would think for only 9 episodes we'd remember, but honestly, I really don't. All I remember is our first episode was talking Infinity War back in May. Tyler and I have had a tradition for the past few years to, you know, we see a lot of movies together. I mean, it's very rare, once in a while, we don't see a movie with each other for whatever reason, but...
Man, we've been doing really good.
We have been doing really well recently.
Considering, you mentioned that we did it back in May, and that kind of, I'm like, wow. Yeah, we actually made it through 4 months. We're coming up on our 10th episode soon.
Yes, we've been talking about doing this.
We actually did not bail on this.
March or April. March and April, we were talking about it, like trying to find, you know, a good date to start. You were getting off topic already. Come on, we had 9 episodes to figure this out.
I'm thinking maybe if I can distract you for an hour, we can end the episode without ever getting to Happy Time Murders.
But what about the other stuff we have to talk about?
We can talk
today?
About that stuff.
We won't talk about it for long. It was really bad.
It was awful.
We have a tradition to see one really bad summer movie a year. And this year was Happy Time Murders.
And normally it's a higher profile one, too.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those that I kind of expected to do really badly. And it's had, like, commercials and things, but I feel like it hasn't even really had, like, a big promotional push or anything either. It's, you know, if you know about it, you kind of know how you feel already without even watching it. The trailers kind of give you a very clear sense of what you're in for. But I feel like normally, because, I mean, there was one year we did Batman v Superman, there was one year we did Pixels, there was one year, what other really bad ones have we seen?
We saw Ratchet and Clank, but I think that was in the same year as others.
Ratchet and Clank. Wow, that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, well, we should just do an episode talking about all the bad movies that we forced each other to watch. But no, Happy Time Murders, which, one thing I will say, and it's not a plus to the movie, it's plus to parents, actually, is that I haven't really read anything online about parents who mistaken this for a children's movie just because there's puppets in it.
Yeah.
Granted, they put murders in the freaking title, so
yeah,
they had to say
that
something.
Might have helped.
But, you know, I remember back when Deadpool and Deadpool 2 came out, you know, a lot of parents were disgusted because they said, well, this is a Marvel movie. Let's bring my kids to see this, not really knowing who Deadpool was.
And it's everything. And it's always like that. It's Deadpool, Deadpool 2, but you've also got, you know, like a Conker's Bad Fur Day. You've got Avenue Q, if you're familiar with the Broadway musical. There's always something like that.
There really is.
Speaking of which, also, if you're thinking of seeing Happy Time Murders, you should find Avenue Q instead. It is just as adult and has its very mature themes, but it's executed in a way that is not awful.
Point blank, the movie itself, I mean, we just saw this last week, and I've already forgotten most of the characters in it, only because, much like I said about Christopher Robin, which Christopher Robin was at least watchable, this has one of those movies that's just a paper-thin plot that you can kind of figure out right from the beginning who did it, what they're dealing with, only this time, instead of people or cartoons, it's a mixture of people and puppets. And it's just really bad. I mean, really bad. And the puppets look nice. I mean,
it's directed by Brian Henson. So it comes from that pedigree. Because when Jim Henson passed on, he passed on, you know, the Muppets to Brian Henson and his son. And, you know, this is coming from the same guy that did, like, Muppet Treasure Island. When you consider this guy did Muppet Treasure Island and then this...
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't know. But, and my understanding is actually, I think it kind of lost its way at some point, because my understanding is this is actually a plot that's been kicking around for like a couple decades.
It really has.
With the Muppet Studio. And it was originally going to be kind of like an adult Muppet movie, but it's been in like production hell for so long that I think it kind of... It became like this weird, just offensive, blob of a film. It changed scripts so many times, and it kind of, you know, they didn't know whether to make it like a raunchy movie or like a film noir or, you know, like kind of how to approach it. And I think it kind of suffers from a real bad identity crisis too. It doesn't really know who it wants to appeal to.
Appeals to nobody.
Yeah,
horrible.
And at the end of the day, it just didn't appeal to much of anyone, except awkwardly the one guy that we were at the theater with. This has gotten almost unanimously bad reviews, and I cannot think of anyone that has really liked this movie, except for the one guy down and to our right when we went to see it. He would not stop laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. and I feel bad for him because that is the sense of humor that appeals to him.
Yeah.
And I doubt he will ever watch this. I don't know who he was. I didn't see his face. But if you are watching this and you happens to be in the showing and you were the guy that was riotously laughing a few rows down from us and to the right, then I apologize for your sense of humor. And I hope that you someday find a more mature way of thinking.
I just say more power to you. A little bit different. But hey, the movie itself, it had no charm. It had no... Yeah, we knew what it was going into it, for sure. But there's just nothing there. I mean, I think like maybe two jokes maybe laugh a little bit.
I had one that I giggled at.
Yeah, but
not even like a chuckle or a chortle or even a full laugh, but just a small like kind of an I pushed air out through my nose loud enough that Mike could tell that I found it somewhat humorous.
See, now you're talking chemistry, which one of our viewers is a good friend of mine who's a chemistry teacher. So shout out to you, Chrissy.
There was one gag, and it was. I probably shouldn't even bother going into the joke itself, but
it's still new enough. But
it was just. It was so bad. It's not worth it. It's I'm not, like I said, I'm not even going to bother explaining the joke, but there was one gag that I kind of just like, huh, and that was about the best it got from me. But it was not funny. It did not make a whole lot of sense. It was also more offensive than I thought it would be. I knew it was going to be kind of like raunchy and offensive going in, but I feel like there were more gags, more like racially and sexually charged gags that I did not expect. Even all things considered, like knowing what to expect going in, there were a couple of times where I was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's going to be like some angry letters about this. This is not cool in a society where we get offended by everything right now.
And, you know, I think, you know, with who they had to act in it, Melissa McCarthy, who, you know, you can say what you want. She's there. She's not my favorite. She's not my least favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of there. And then I forget the name of the actor.
She's such a strange enigma, I feel like.
This is the type of movie that she would do, I feel.
Yeah. It's not a surprise that she's in the movie, but it's just kind of like, she's kind of like a weird actress for me. She's one of those where it's like, I'll watch a movie that she's in and I'll just absolutely hate it. And I'm like, wow, you know, obviously I don't like her. But then I'll see like a Saturday Night Live sketch and I'm like, oh, wow, she was actually kind of funny in that one Saturday Night Live sketch. And then I'll see like another movie and I'm like, oh, wow, that was awful again. You know, it's like I never really know what to expect from her, but more often than not, it's nothing like pleasurable.
I wish you didn't say that word about this movie.
It doesn't surprise me that she's in it, and I'll let you take that how you will.
I just don't want to talk about it anymore. The movie was downright
you said
terrible.
You were talking about the actors. It's got Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. And then it's also got Joel McHale, which I wouldn't recommend you going to see it if you like Joel McHale. If you liked Community, this is not Community Joel McHale. This is more like the jerk Joel McHale from the Video Game Awards a few years back. If you remember kind of how that whole fiasco went, this is more in line with that than it was with anything that he was actually good in.
I don't even remember what I was going to say much more about the actors and actresses. The movie itself just, it just didn't have any charm. You know, a lot of people were saying like, oh, you know, you talked about this, is that you have more of a connection with the Muppets than I do. And obviously I love the Muppets, don't get me wrong, but I'm okay with seeing something a little darker. Like, you know, when the short Power/Rangers film came out, you know, personally I was one that didn't really like it. I don't care that it existed. I mean, I thought, okay, you know, someone wrote a decent story and put Power Rangers on it. You know, they just made it dark, you know, with the Rangers doing drugs and alcohol and sex and all that stuff. But this movie just didn't have, you know, thankfully it didn't have, you know, any, at least that I saw, I don't know if you saw any cameos from the original Muppets, even just kind of being in the background. I didn't see any of that.
I think so. I noticed they used a couple very minor Muppets. Not any of the ones from like the main cast. Nobody that you would really recognize.
Okay.
But if you grew up watching the Muppet Show and all the Muppet movies, you know, if that was like a really steady thing for you, like it was for me, there was one or two times where I noticed kind of like a background Muppet from the Muppet Show that was also kind of a background Muppet here. But it was never, you know, none of the Muppets that you know and love showed up. It was one of those, you know, kind of like ensemble Muppets kind of like popped up in the background once in a while. Just something they recycled because it was there and they could use it without sullying their good names.
Anyway, the movie was terrible, so don't go and see it.
It was bad.
Don't red box it.
It wasn't funny. It wasn't engaging. It wasn't, there was no heart to it. And it was highly offensive and you shouldn't view it.
Yeah, pretty much.
I would say, so normally we give them numbers. I would say as a Muppet movie, I would just give it a straight up 0. As a comedy, I would give it a 1, which is the same number of times that I laughed. And strangely, I hadn't, you know, we didn't discuss any of this, which sometimes we discuss things, sometimes we don't, but we did not discuss any of this. We try to hold off if we can. Strangely, the one thing that struck me was it was actually a somewhat competent like film noir. They did kind of bring in that atmosphere and that feel of like the old noir films of like the murder mystery and stuff. I think if you removed all of the gags and all of the humor and just made it a straight like murder mystery drama, I could get on board with giving it like a 4 or a 5 just for the murder mystery part. But as a whole, I would probably give it like a 1.
I'd have to agree with you about giving it the 1, but I couldn't even give it a 4 for what you just said, only because much like how you knew what was going to happen in Christopher Robin, you could easily figure out who one of the protagonists was, who one of the bad guys, quote unquote, if you will, mm-hmm. in this movie was.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even give it that. I'd have to give it a 1 or 2 just overall, and that's even being nice. But I don't want to talk mm-hmm. about this anymore. We saw it. It's done. Our bad movie of summer 2018 is out of the way. Let's move on to something okay. I really want to talk about, unless you got something else.
No, that was mostly it.
All right, so for
I could keep on trying to justify why I thought it worked better as a film noir, but it's not worth it.
We'll write up a blog post.
Yeah, because it's just awful. It's all over awful, and I don't want to start trying to justify, you know, the film noir aspect, because I don't want you to think about that part and want to see it.
No,
that would be misleading because you shouldn't see it.
No,
ever at any expense.
And I can, you know, I guess I should say the one last thing I want to say is I think what I was kind of expecting from this movie and was probably going to happen is it's going to bomb now. Is it pretty much after it came out, like all the ads, everything kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Is that this movie is going to be one of those things where it's I think it's going to be like The Room, where it's just so bad it's going to disappear for a while. Memes are going to start to slowly show up for it in a few years, and it's going to get that cult following just for how bad it is, and then we'll get a sequel. Or
kinda
we'll get
like,
or we'll get like The Room with what's-his-face that just did it recently that was actually halfway good.
Kind of like, if you're familiar, there was Meet the Feebles, which was directed by Peter Jackson, the man that went on to do Lord of the Rings. Back before he did Lord of the Rings and before he was as famous and popular, he did a movie in the UK called Meet the Feebles, which was another highly offensive, adult-oriented, Muppet-inspired movie. And the whole thing, that was the whole spiel, was, and it parodied the Muppets at every turn. It was about these Muppets that, you know, they sang and they danced, but it was about, like, the horrible things that they did and got into whenever they were off stage, kind of like the backstage antics that you'd see in the Muppets, except with, you know, gore and swearing and things like that. And that movie was just as awful, at least for me. It was one of the few movies that I just really can't stomach. I think I actually mentioned that a couple episodes ago. I think I had talked about Meet the Feebles before, just how yes. horrifying that movie is and how much I don't like it. But it's kind of the same deal here, which I'm kind of worried about, because just like you said, Meet the Feebles is one of those that kind of gained this weird cult following, and now it's kind of regarded as like a hidden gem in Peter Jackson's old work. And I don't want that. I want this movie to not exist.
But it does. I got nothing else I'm going to add on to it.
Yeah, I think we need to move on with a very strong...
Yeah, pretty much. I can't... moving on to the next topic, because that's my segue, because I can't think of a
number. That's better than a number.
It's better than a number.
We shouldn't give it a 1 or even a 0. We should give it a out of 10.
Yeah, pretty much that's what it was. moving on to something that wasn't a out of 10, is Power Rangers just celebrated its 25th anniversary. Here in the States, it premiered August 25th, 1993. man, numbers. And they did a 25th anniversary special on Nickelodeon that actually didn't suck.
How about that?
I know, right? This one was the exact opposite of Happy Time Murders. So the thing with this one is, and I'm just going to touch on it briefly because I don't know if you saw it or not. And I don't want to spoil.
I did not see the 25th, and I've also not read Shattered Grid yet.
Which, right, so I won't spoil that one either.
Mike has given me a lot of garbage about that, but I have not read it. Mostly because I went and looked into it, and I wanted to start it from the beginning and get into, you know, all the spinoffs and things, find all the issues. And then I found out they're releasing it as like an omnibus.
Yes, they are.
Now that it's over and the finale is done, they're going to be releasing like a Shattered Grid set. Yes. And so yes. I was like, instead of going through and trying to piece out each individual issue from the different series and things, why not just wait and read it whenever it's compiled for me? Right. So because I'm lazy, I am waiting to read Shattered Grid.
So but I'm not going to go into spoilers on either of them.
Yeah, but if you've read it, I've heard that it's really good.
Yes. So for the 25th anniversary, I'm not going to spoil a lot of it. I mean, I'm not going to spoil any of it, I should say. I will say that compared to the 20th anniversary, which was the Legendary War, where it really was 21st year because it was Megaforce and Super Megaforce, that one didn't really have a lot of heart to it. You know, Rangers, like, there was like 3 episodes where different Rangers showed up. And then in the finale, which was a 30-minute or 22-minute for Nickelodeon episode, like, a whole bunch of them came together. They fought a war, bada bing, bada bing, that was it. Although the DVD did have an extended cut, which I'm sure we're going to get an extended cut of this one as well, because this one was also only 22 minutes. But this one was definitely done a little better. Like, each Ranger kind of did their own thing. They came in. Obviously, Tommy's there, because you can't have a 25th anniversary. You can't have any anniversary of Power Rangers without Tommy. Mm-hmm. And this one was done very, very well. I'm not going to get into spoilers of it. There was one thing that I absolutely loved seeing at the end that I wasn't expecting. Hasbro, if you're paying attention, Tommy used a morpher that could very well be a toy. Hasbro, come on. Everyone's saying, make this a toy. I had like this legendary morpher. You know, as Tommy's like 5 different Rangers. So that could be something.
Is this the same spoiler that you're not giving now, but you posted on Facebook?
I posted a scene on Facebook.
I was scrolling through Facebook, and I saw a video you had posted.
Yes, that was me.
Is it the same spoiler?
That's one of them, but I mean, okay. It's not really a spoiler.
We won't spoil it for our viewers and listeners, but yes. I think I know what you're talking about.
But, you know, but what I liked about it is things were explained a little bit, as for a kid's show, especially Power Rangers now, because it was explained better back then, it is established that Power Rangers are in different universes, are in different worlds. Like in Shattered Grid, it's also explained. So I really liked how they did this one and how they brought everything together. There were still some questions that weren't answered, but again, this is a 22-minute thing compared to what we may see in extended cut that I don't want to get into is, I don't want to spoil for them. But one of the big things that I really, really, really liked, and this again is not a spoiler, you know, I'm going to say like the villain's name, but I'm not going to say his backstory, is it had a lot of ties to Shattered Grid actually in the show, believe it or not. It really did. In Shattered Grid, the main villain, who again, his name is Lord Drakon. In the episode, the villain they're dealing with is Lord Draven. You know, figure that one out.
Yeah.
There were a few other little ones where what he was doing, and I'm not gonna say why, he was shooting arrows into a cracked area in the sky. Cracked area, shattered, you know, mm-hmm. Shattered grid. could have something to do with each other. You never know. But what I liked about the diversity this time is that, you know, you got a lot of different Rangers coming back. Some of them, yes, did have more airtime than others. Again, we got to really see what happens with an extended cut, which I'm sure we're going to get. As again, I apologize about the pups outside. Excited, of course, you know. But I thought this was done really well, especially for, you know, as we all know, Hasbro's taking everything over Power Rangers. They're doing the toys, they're doing the show, they're doing everything. I know the next season, Beast Morpher still says Saban on it, but if this was Saban's, like, last hurrah for us, like, giving us one more thing before it officially transfers over, which, if I had to take a guess, is when Disney purchased Power Rangers back in 2001, they were still in the production of Wild Force. So I'd imagine that Saban and Hasbro are going to work together on Beast Morphers. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it'll just be straight Hasbro. So I think this is like the last full-on Saban deal. Here you go. And it was done very well. And I love seeing all those Rangers come back. Some other things could have been answered in this one that I'm not going to say from 1995, potentially. There's a hint for you, which I'm not going to say to you. But going on to Shattered, unless, of course, you know, I was going to say, I know you didn't see it, so I don't know if you have any really thoughts you want to say about the show. I'm going to talk about Shattered Grid for a minute.
No, go for it.
All right, so Shattered Grid just ended up episode issue 30, and maybe another cliffhanger type of ending. Maybe it kind of sort of reminded me of a Walking Dead incident that just kind of happened recently in the show. But who knows with it? But what Shattered Grid did so well from beginning to end was establish that Power Rangers themselves are in different universes. That each universe has a different team or things kind of happen differently. Like the last season of Power Rangers, the show that just happened, we're on Ninja Steel and Super Ninja Steel now. The season before that was Dino Charge and Super Dino Charge. Is when they went back in time to make sure the Energems were, you know, safe. When a couple of them went back to their time, you know, all of them were different diversity of Rangers. So one of them was a caveman who was frozen but was able to survive because he had the blue Energem. One of them was a knight, you know, back in the old days of Rome. So they went back to their times. And when the main Rangers went back to theirs, dinosaurs still lived. The comet never hit the planet. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, in the show it's explained that the villain at the time made the asteroid hit the planet to find the engines, blah, blah, blah. For this one, it shows the different universes of Power Rangers. It shows what we can have. It shows what it can do. It shows what all these different universes coming together. All the plot points were sewed up nice and neat, little bow on top. Couple maybe tiny questions to build up to the next one, because they're definitely not done making comics. Shattered Grid, the storyline is done, but now it's on to the next season. It's on to the next arc, which I am very, very excited for. And I'm very excited for you to read it, so next time when we're reviewing some Power Rangers stuff, you can jump in with us, especially on the comics. But, you know, again, the one gripe that a lot of people seem to have to say about the 25th anniversary, and I'm just going to kind of say this and that'll be it for me, is people were complaining about the CGI in it.
Okay.
Which, yeah, the CGI was terrible. But again, this is Power Rangers. It's got a budget of plastic bags and rubber bands, for crying out loud.
And, like, a sour ball that they left in their pocket too long and yes. is, like, covered in lint now.
Yeah. So, yeah, the CGI for some things were really bad. But, again, it's Power Rangers. It's supposed to be low budget. It's supposed to be cheesy. And that's exactly what we got. It's not a big high-end Marvel movie or something. But in terms of the show, it worked very well. And I was very happy to see it. Again, you know, was it perfect? No, it wasn't perfect by any means. But Power Rangers isn't supposed to be perfect. It's supposed to just be a fun, happy-go-lucky thing. And this one was. And we got to see something that we really wanted to see, which I'm not going to spoil, although it's all over the internet.
And I haven't seen it. I did not watch it. But I can also, with all of my heart, say you should definitely watch that before Happy Time Murders.
Me too, actually. Me too. I think we can agree on that one. Don't bring up Happy Time Murders anymore.
The only other thing, I think, were you finished?
Yeah, I'm pretty much okay. Done with the Power Rangers.
The only other thing I wanted to mention is more sad news. Mm. As part of my continuing to try to save money, which we talked about earlier, I also went ahead and canceled my pledge for Heroes of the Grid. So I'm really glad that you're getting a copy.
Yes.
If you guys remember from an episode or two ago, Heroes of the Grid is a new Power Rangers board game that's being kickstarted. And we had both pre-ordered copies, and I ended up canceling mine just, again, because of money and, you know, an upcoming home down payment. But,
kind of important. Kind of important.
Yeah. So, like, it's justified, but it's also very sad because I like board games.
I didn't think you'd be finished talking. I was like, I'll get a drink, but
so
okay.
That was all I had to say, and Mike was drinking, so...
Yeah, so that awkward sounds is me taking a, taking a sip of my water.
And instead of trying to fill the silence like a good podcaster would, I just sat here silently staring
and
at him.
It's what we do. but don't worry, guys. I will still be getting my copy of Heroes of the Storm, whatever. I'm thinking about my water.
We focus on minimal professionality.
Pretty much, we just wing everything. When we get the board game, we'll make sure to do a stream of it or take a video of us trying to learn how to play. Hopefully, I won't lose because I am the bigger fan of practice than you.
Just bring it over, and I will teach myself how to play, and then I will teach you guys.
That works for me. You know,
I love the board games.
It'll be Tyler, myself, Haven, Liliana, and Maverick, the dogs you were hearing barking a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so moving on from that, one of our big topics is one thing about me that I've mentioned, obviously Tyler knows, is September 1st, the day that we're recording this. Today is the start of the holidays for me. You have 4 months left of the year. Holiday gluttony games come out between September and usually April, mm-hmm. But this is our first big batch of it.
Yeah.
And
it stands to reason because
it does.
This is when developers start releasing their games because they want big purchases for Christmas.
Absolutely. And this is when we start seeing a lot of the delays of things. But mm-hmm. hey, you know, that's going to come too. So, right off the bat in September, within 7 days of each other, next Friday, off the bat, Spider-Man that we're talking about. I am really excited for this, being the Spider-Man fan that I am. And essentially it's because we don't, you know, some games to me have kind of gotten sour. You know, we get Call of Duty every year. We get Assassin's Creed mostly every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get your sports games every year. You get, you know, I can't even name them all right now. You know, Far Cry kind of is like every other year to every 2 years.
Yeah. Every other year to every 2 years.
Every other year to every 3 years. But for something like this, for Spider-Man, you know, I don't want to compare it to what the amazing people at Rocksteady have done with the Batman Arkham series, but this is what it's reminding me of, and I love the Batman games. I mean, they were beautifully done. The combat, the gameplay, the story.
The Arkham games are probably some of the best superhero games ever made.
Yes.
But Spider-Man also has the pedigree of Insomniac behind it.
Oh, absolutely.
Which just kind of makes me feel even better. And the gameplay has been nothing but great so far.
Yes. And, you know, just recently they started talking about, oh, there's going to be a graphical downgrade. Let's see the game
first. No, they
haven't.
People have been complaining that there's been a graphical downgrade. And the developers came back and said, we didn't downgrade anything. We just changed them.
You know,
people saw that, like, you know, there was a scene where at one point there was a lot of water on the ground. And then in a newer gameplay, there was less water there. And they were like, oh, they downgraded the graphics. And they're like, no, we didn't. We removed the water. It's concrete now instead of water. We didn't change the graphics there at all.
And people just are going to complain about everything and anything that they can do.
Yeah.
But I am so looking forward to this game. I'll be playing it mostly all day on Friday. And it's just the first one, you know. We'll have a full review of it, so I'm not going to go into too much of it now and have too much Spider-Man in this podcast and the next one. But right after that, one of my favorite franchises is coming back, and it's Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Tomb Raider. I played all the Tomb Raider games that I can get my grubby hands on from PS1 on up, even the Game Boy Color ones way back when. Those were terrible.
Angel of Darkness?
Yes. I mean, it's just...
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me 5 words to describe Angel of Darkness.
It's been a while. I'll always say it's fun, somehow.
Fun?
Dark, gritty.
Dark, gritty.
Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider.
That's right.
Fun, dark, gritty, Tomb Raider.
There you go. That was almost a sentence.
For Angel of Darkness, though?
I mean, it's been a while since I played it.
It was such a weird game.
It was... Here's the thing. Like, obviously, if you talk about Tomb Raider, people are going to think of Tomb Raiders that were on the PS1. Mm-hmm. The PS2 versions and the Xbox 360 versions were just, you know, they're different.
They kind of, like, so Angel of Darkness was, like, the weird transitional one.
Yes.
Because, like, the old ones were, I still got,
hiding over there somewhere.
Well, the ones that came out for Dreamcast, I got for Dreamcast.
Yes, of course. Because
I think it was, the first one or the first two were exclusive. Yes. For PlayStation, but the ones that they released for Dreamcast, I've got for Dreamcast. And, you know, those are great in their own right, but they've got, like, the tank controls. The controls are a little bit outdated. But it's a very... They are solid adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
Same for even, like, before they rebooted them back in 2013. They had kind of, like, settled into this routine for, like, Underworld and Legend and those, where it was, like... They were okay, you know, they were fine adventure games, but they were also generic. They were kind of just like repeating themselves. And then Angel of Darkness was like kind of this slow-moving platform story, sort of. And it was like you would do the weirdest things, and that was how you upgraded your body.
Yeah.
So it'd be one of those where you would, like, walk up to a door and she'd be like, I can't open this door right now. But then you'd be, like, walking down the road and she'd all of a sudden be like, oh, you walked enough. My legs feel stronger now. And you walk back to the door and all of a sudden she can kick in that door because you walked enough that it upgraded her legs or something like that. Like, it was such a weird system.
Back in the days of the PS2.
Yeah. And PC. I played it on PC. PS2.
Yes.
But it's like... It's one of those where I've seen games do that really effectively, where, you know, like the type of weapon you use or the type of combat you choose, you know, it increases those stats. And I've seen that done really effectively. And in Angel of Darkness, it wasn't. It was weird.
Right.
It was strange. And it wasn't even like that bad of a game. It was just really hindered by these like strange design choices as far as like progression and like. Not a true leveling system, but like a quasi like level up system. But that was just kind of a strange game altogether. But they've kind of reinvented themselves with these new ones.
Especially the one that got me back into the series just in general was Tomb Raider that came out on PS3 initially. And then I got it again on PS4, the Game of the Year edition. Mm-hmm. And Rise of the Tomb Raider, of course, was fantastic.
Yeah.
Some people will say, oh, you know, story's kind of paper thin, whatever. I mean, I enjoyed the combat. I enjoyed watching the character development grow.
Yeah.
And this next one is, like, just a continuation of the series. So I have very high hopes of it. Of course, you know, I'll make sure to talk about it on the next episode. That'll be a very Tomb Raider, Spider-Man-esque episode, I think. So, again, I don't want to get too much into it now because, again, I don't want to talk a lot about it now and a lot about it on the next one and have people get bored of me talking the same game twice. But for September, I'm going to try and look at my list here of things because I have absolutely doesn't...
So you're looking for upcoming games?
Upcoming games, like, you know, I reserve a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. as you know. So I'm seeing what else is coming out. I know at the end of September, which I played it this January on PS4, but I got it again because I got a little bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Dragon Ball FighterZ, and you know, you guys know me as like a very big Dragon Ball Z fan, and of course I can't pull it up, stupid app.
And there's a lot of games.
There's a lot of games, and you know, FighterZ. One thing that I don't know if I just missed the difficulty setting. I like to play a story, which admittedly FighterZ had some decent stories. I'm not gonna lie, you know, there's three different stories. But they were so easy to play. Mm-hmm. It was not like the original Budokai days or the Budokai Tenkaichi days where they progressively got tougher. I remember playing Budokai 1 and having the toughest time trying to beat Cell with Team Gohan. This one, you know, you have characters. You can lose characters as they die, but it's easy to recruit more. The only time I ever really got less than maybe a half to a quarter of my health bar with the one character I was using was when I was trying to mess with the controller to do a special attack. And then when I started not being able to pull it off fast enough, then I just went back to beating the crap out of my opponent. Mm-hmm. And they barely did anything. I mean, even the final boss on all three of them were so easy to do. So I'm hoping that with the Switch version, you know, the difficulty was ramped up a little bit. Or, you know, again, I could have missed the difficulty setting in general on my PS4, that there's a difficulty setting for this one that is like, you know, easy, medium, hard, whatever. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, It was just so easy. It was like, everybody knows I love Dragon Ball Z, but it became a chore, not because it was hard, but because it was so easy. But at the same time, I wanted to complete the story. So I was just like, why am I doing this? Just make it an episode or a movie. And yeah, it would have been better than trying to put it in a game. Now, granted, the multiplayer was fine. Playing against other people who know what they were doing, that was the challenge. But for somebody like me, who just enjoys a story, who wants to play a story like Tomb Raider or Spider-Man's going to give to me, that one kind of was the big one.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps up September for me. There's a couple in October we could talk about.
Yeah, we could.
So did you have anything else for September?
For September, we got, I think, the big one was Spider-Man for me. I'm super excited for Tomb Raider, but I think even more, I'm just like super stoked for Spider-Man.
I would say the same, only because, you know, as I mentioned before with some of the other games, you get them every couple years. Tomb Raider mm-hmm. has been one of them, you know, and again, that's fine with me because I love Tomb Raider.
As long as they keep making them super solid.
Yes.
Yes. Assassin's Creed started making like really samey games, like really repetitive titles for a little bit there. And there is a lot of burnout.
Yes.
But as long as they keep focusing on quality and don't just push one out because, you know, it's been a couple years and they need to, I'm super fine with that.
Yes. And, you know, Spider-Man's just something new. You know, we haven't had a Spider-Man game since probably the movie titles, I want to say. I could be wrong.
Yeah, but we don't count those.
No.
We don't talk, you know, don't do like the Amazing Spider-Man, like franchise tie-in titles. I think probably the last solid Spider-Man game we got was Spider-Man 2 for like PS2.
Those, I think Web of Shadows wasn't terrible. That was on PS3, 360.
I didn't play that one.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. That was on 3DS. But this one's like, you know, Insomniac, PlayStation exclusive. This is gonna be one of their big hitter titles this year.
Yeah.
For the holiday to sell their console.
I'd say this is probably gonna be Sony's highest profile title this year.
God of War.
Oh, I forgot about God of War.
So you gotta think, God of War that came out earlier this year combined with this, you know, is really gonna propel Sony's. I mean, it's they don't have to do this, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was like a Black Friday bundle of God of War and a PS4, much like how you can get a Spider-Man PS4. But you know, if people are buying a PS4, they're going to attach at least one, if not both of these games to it, just right off the bat.
Speaking of which,
yes,
I know we've talked about this before.
What's that?
But play God of War.
Yes.
Like now. If you haven't done it by now, go get it and play it now.
And enjoy it.
It is the best.
Yes. So moving on to October. Right off the bat in October. Like,
are you going to talk about the one I want you to talk about?
If it's the one that comes out on the 3rd or 4th.
I don't remember what day it comes out. I'm just excited.
Okay, well, it comes out like the first couple days of October. I think it comes out that first Friday. One of my favorite franchises.
Oh, maybe not.
Okay, well, I mean, you just got lost it. That's okay. One of my favorite franchises is coming back, and that is Mega Man 11. Capcom has not canceled this one yet like they did the Legends for the 3DS. Mm-hmm. This is coming. I am excited. I mean, you know, I was so excited to play Mighty No. 9, which was just a train wreck of... It was a train wreck. Capcom, do well by this one, please. I have been waiting for... You know, you guys did...
I know I keep doing this to you.
What's up?
Do you remember earlier whenever I mentioned Happy Time Murders and you said don't bring it up again?
Yes.
And I said Happy Time Murders just gets a out of 10?
That's what you're going to say about this?
I was going to say Mighty No. 9 is kind of a...
Okay. As long as you say Mighty No. 9, that's fine. But Mega Man 11, I can't wait. I mean, I got both collections, you know, the original 6 and then the X collection. Still can sit down and play them to this day. Absolutely adore them.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, you know, I hope that the challenge is there for this one still. Because obviously people know Mega Man is known for being difficult.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, hopefully an older son of a gun like me with my slower reflexes can still play. But I'm excited for this one. This one comes out right away in October. What else is coming in October? I know they announced Luigi's Mansion, the remake for the 3DS, is also going to be in October.
Which is a super bummer, because I was really hoping that they would also announce that Luigi's Mansion was going to come to Switch. I was really, really hoping that they would say, okay, this is the announce date, and also you're getting a Switch copy, and I would have been sold.
I'm going to take it a step further and say I wish they would re-release that and Dark Moon as a combo pack on Switch.
Oh, that would be cool. You like know, they did with Bayonetta.
Yeah, you know, just get, even if it was, you know, $49.99, you know, make it a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
That would have sold, that would have been another Mario-esque game that you could have put there.
That would have been another, not that they need another system seller, I mean, the Switch is already flying off the shelves, but that would have been a super solid choice to get more off the shelves.
But I think they're doing this just to also, I mean, they don't really need to sell a lot more. I mean, last year, 3DSs, pre-owned and new, were sold out everywhere.
Yeah.
Really were. I mean, I'm sure Pokemon has something to do with it. And, you know, people are saying, oh, you know, the 3DS is slowly going to be phased out little by little, which it very well could be. Mm-hmm. You know, we got recently, I think the beginning of October, WarioWare Gold, which was a party game of all, like, I think it was like 100 of the best WarioWare titles, maybe more than that. Obviously, Luigi's Mansion is going to help sell it. And there might be another one or two that I'm missing coming out for that, you know, mm-hmm. could also be system sellers or help system sellers.
But a lot of the ones that were, like, the big 3DS games are starting to transition now.
They are. Absolutely, they are.
The new Shin Megami Tensei is coming to Switch instead of 3DS. If I remember right, Etrian Odyssey is also transferring to Switch now. Didn't they announce one of those?
I don't know. Honestly, I'm trying to pull up the app again.
I'm one to think that Etrian Odyssey got announced for Switch too. So it's good that they're still making some first party stuff because they're starting to lose a lot of their third party support. But ironically, they're losing their third party support to their own newer console. So it's kind of a win-win for them, I guess.
That's true. And, you know, I'm looking at some things here. You know, Mega Man 11 officially comes out October 2nd. Mm-hmm. Luigi's Mansion is 10 days later on mm-hmm. the 12th. And then right after that you and I were both excited about.
Can we talk about it?
Is it the new IP that's coming from Ubisoft? Yes.
Battle for Atlas.
Starlink Battle for Atlas that officially comes out October 16th that I've said I think is going to be a very underrated hit. $75, you get the game plus a figure, obviously.
I'm so excited. I love the Toys to Life stuff. I can't stop doing the Toys to Life stuff.
I'm excited to play this one. Only, you know, I mean, I say this about a lot of games because I don't want people to think I hate everything. I love Star Fox. Star Fox Zero for Wii U is let down, unfortunately. So I'm hoping that this one can really turn things around. Mm-hmm. And even though it's not a Star Fox game, you know, obviously Switch is Ubisoft and Nintendo, they like each other. I think, you know, things are getting kind of serious. You know, they're meeting each other's parents, I mm-hmm. guess, if you will. So,
this would be like that episode toward the end of The Bachelor.
Yes.
Where like they go home and meet all the parents when there's only like 3 or 4 contestants left. I shouldn't know that, should I?
No,
that was a weird reference to make on here.
Going back to video games. So that one's coming out October 16th. I really can't wait to play this one. Put Star Fox to battle in that. The Toys to Life is fine. I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready.
And one question I still have. So for Switch, which I know we're both doing Switch.
Yes.
For Switch, there's an exclusive Star Fox figure and ship. That's your Switch thing. Everybody else gets, like, their generic starter pack, which comes with, like, an actual pilot and, a different ship. Like, mm-hmm. a pilot and ship that were made for Battle for Atlas. They haven't announced that they will be available separately. So I'm a little bit worried that by doing Switch, we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot because we're going to have to get the Star Fox ship, but also buy another starter pack to get those starter figures.
Knowing Ubisoft, because they like money and, like, most businesses do, I'm sure there's going to be something separate that comes out. So,
I really hope so, because I don't want to miss out on like the regular starter pack by getting the Nintendo one.
All right, so going on from... That was good. Going on from that, we're going into November now, and we're not going to talk about every single thing, as we'd be here forever. This game actually got pushed back, because this was supposed to come out right in between Spider-Man and Tomb Raider, was a Spyro the Reignited Trilogy on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Surprisingly not Switch yet, but I'm sure we're going to get some for that soon.
Yeah, they did that for Crash Bandicoot, though. They announced Crash Bandicoot, and then they announced the Switch compatibility later on. So I'm
They did Crash only on PS4 first, and then Switch and Xbox One came a year later.
Yeah.
This one was, you know, Spyro's coming on both PS... I think it's on Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's coming. Obviously, you know, very excited for that to go back and play, you know, one of the greatest PS1 games that was a system mover. Mm-hmm. All three of them are going to be there. So excited about that. You know, there's not much we can really say because it's Spyro. I mean, yeah, it's great that it's, you know, remastered, but, you know, it's nothing new.
And then...
On November 16th, something called Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
Yes!
I don't know. Some,
yes!
Something stupid.
I've got Let's Go Pikachu pre-ordered, and I've got Let's Go Eevee pre-ordered, and I've got the Pokeball controller pre-ordered, and I've been playing, and you've been playing too. You got back into Pokemon Go.
I did, actually.
Haven and I have been playing Pokemon Go, trying to catch everything and build up our stuff so that we're ready, because Pokemon Go is going to be compatible with the Let's Go Pokemon games for Switch. If you didn't know that yet, it's super cool, and you should be excited.
And apparently there's going to be an exclusive Pokemon you get to meet between the two of them, which mm-hmm. could be for the next generation. Who mm-hmm. knows? So obviously, all these games, I'm sure we're going to have a review on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't think, you know, I'm a horror fan. You might actually get a kick out of this one, too, Bendy and the mm-hmm. Ink Machine.
I have not played Bendy and the Ink Machine.
I watched walkthroughs of it.
I keep wanting to play it, but I have not played it myself. And now I'm kind of really glad that I didn't play it because we're finally getting it for Switch.
Yes.
And Switch has become, like, my go-to way of playing anything ever now anyway. I love the Switch and, like, everything about it.
And then just to kind of wrap up, well, I'm going to talk about this one. This one supposedly is coming this year, although there's no official release date for it yet. And that's Team Sonic Racing from Sega. I'm excited for this one because I thought the Sonic All-Stars Racing games were fantastic. I thought they were really, really good. So I'm excited to try this one out whenever the release date comes for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last game for this year...
Is it... Smash Brothers?
It actually is. It's called Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. That comes out December 7th.
Are we also getting Mario Party?
Oh, Mario Party's coming out this year too. That's right. That comes out in October. I forgot about
that. That's what I thought.
So, a lot of good things coming out. Mm-hmm. And this is the we're not even going to go into next year yet. Right off the bat in January, which I'm sure as we get to November, December, if we're still doing this, which hopefully we are, we'll talk about the Resident Evil 2 remake. We'll talk about Kingdom Hearts 3. Those two are like the two big ones right away in January.
Yeah.
It's going to be a holiday glutton. We're to that time of year again. We're to my favorite time of year where people go freaking broke buying this stuff. And then not only are they buying that stuff they want, they're going to buy other stuff on Black Friday because it's like 70% off, mm-hmm. like me. And it's going to sit on your shelf forever, like me. Anyway.
You sit on people's shelves?
I do sit on people's shelves. I don't have anything else to add to the holiday glutton, but it's coming. So...
I've got a couple more video games I wanted to mention.
Let's hear it. Let's talk about it.
If that's cool.
Let's hear it.
If that's allowed.
No.
So, it's not. Right, never mind then.
give me a couple. Which ones did I not mention that I probably should know about?
Nothing about upcoming. I wanted to talk about games that I'm currently, like, just kind of talk.
Let's hear
about
it.
Games. Okay. First and foremost, this beautiful man right here gave me two Xboxes, one modded and one not modded.
That's right.
And then we went over to his storage unit, and I went and pulled out some Xbox games that I was just able to find. Which there were not. There was a disappointingly small amount of Xbox games. You got to get on that.
I got to find them.
But
find them first.
I was able to find like five that I went ahead and snagged. And there were more, but it just didn't care about them. There were some sports titles, and then there was like some of the Call of Duties and stuff like that, and I left all those. But I grabbed, obviously, Halo and Halo 2. I grabbed Dead to Rights. I grabbed Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath. And I grabbed a fifth one. What was the fifth one?
I don't remember. You took them. I just said, okay.
Anyway, there's another
one.
There's
five games out there. It's on the... You posted on our BFG Facebook fan page.
Yes.
And on Instagram.
Yes. And so... I've been playing those last night, and it was just kind of a nostalgia kick. Mostly Halo. I tested out all the others. Oh, Splinter Cell. Splinter Cell was the fifth one. And I remember I was bummed out by that one because the control doesn't work. I don't know if it's the disc or what, because all the other games worked flawlessly. Splinter Cell, you can't move.
That is, if it's the first Splinter Cell, there's something you got to do, but I don't remember what it is.
Oh, okay.
I remember doing something. I had it for the GameCube once upon a time, and I remember being so confused.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so I was testing them all out, and I played Oddworld for like an hour, and then I popped in Splinter Cell, and I got frustrated real quick and just put it away.
And that was that.
Yeah. And then I played Dead to Rights, which I had never played before, but it's actually surprisingly fun. Mm-hmm. I was having fun with Dead to Rights. Have you played that one?
I don't think I played that one. I know there was a few, and I think there was only the one.
So I played through the first couple missions, and that one's surprisingly fun. I don't remember hearing a lot about it, but I wasn't enjoying what I played of it. And then I booted up Halo, and I pretty much just played Halo for like a few hours last night before I finally went to bed. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's just a lot of fun. You know, obviously you don't need reviews of those games at this point. They're old and they're awesome, and if you're going to play them, you've already played them.
Yes.
But I've just been having a lot of fun with that. The one I wanted to mention that is amazing, if I can find it quick.
This is where we go with professionalism.
Is Ease 8, which came out 2 years ago? Something like that? For the PS Vita.
Yes.
It came out for the PS Vita, and then shortly after, or maybe like a year after or something, it came out for PS4. And then it was followed... It came out for PS4 eventually. Okay, yeah. Maybe just recently. Maybe I'm thinking... Maybe it just came out. Maybe it was all in conjunction. It might have been a Vita exclusive. I don't know. But I know it's out now for PS4 and Windows and Switch, as well as the Vita. Which is good, because no one has a Vita anymore. But,
That's true.
It's pretty much the most fun I've had with a JRPG in years. Even, like, as much as I loved the first Ni No Kuni, Ni No Kuni 2 was good, but not as good as the first one. Ease 8, there's just something about it. Something about, like, the combat system is surprisingly deep, especially for just, like, a button masher. You've got, like, your one real, like, attack button, and then you've got, like, your skills. And you'd think it's fairly simple, and at first it is, but as it grows, the combat system is surprisingly deep. And it's not too grindy. You keep moving forward and you keep on exploring new areas of this island. And the really cool thing in this game, it's a good story, and it's simple. You're basically shipwrecked and you're trying to find your way off this island.
Right.
So it doesn't try to overcomplicate the story. It's a really simple story, but it's really good. And the cool thing is, as you explore the island, you find other people that have been marooned on the island as well. People that were on the ship with you. And as you find these people that were on the ship with you, each one has their own set of skills. But it's not like, you know, you fill up... Because, you know, in some games, it's like you have this party of, like, 25 people. Mm-hmm. But you can only take, like, 3 of them with you. And it's like, well, how do I balance this? How do I keep them all leveled the same? So on and so forth. In this one, you've only got, like, a small number of people that you can have in your party. So far, I've only come across 4. You can have 3 in your party at once, and I've come across 4 actual playable characters. All the other castaways go to castaways. All the other people, they end up congregating at like this little like island village that you start creating for yourself. And as you find materials and castaways, then you start building up this village and you slowly make the village more and more built up, and the people will do more and more things for you. So you might find like a tailor that will build new accessories, mm-hmm. or you might find a blacksmith that will like upgrade your swords and things like that. And so it's this really cool, almost like a rinse and repeat cycle of like you bring the castaways back, you upgrade your village, and then you go back out and you explore a new area and you find more castaways and bring them back, rinse and repeat.
Right.
But it's such a good grind. It doesn't feel like a grindy thing. It's like the way it progresses and the way you can see your progress making a difference on your village is just so satisfying. And so I'm probably like 15 or 20 hours into that now. And it's just like a super solid RPG. I've been having all sorts of fun with that. So I just wanted to give that a quick thumbs up. Let you guys know I was enjoying it. If you guys were thinking about it, or if you hadn't heard of it, but you're intrigued, it's a whole lot of fun.
And there you go. So, Ease 8. Keep supporting a series like that. We'll keep getting more.
Yes.
So, I think moving on, we got one more Q&A?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we posted, and I'm going to give them a shout-out quick. I talked a little bit about them in our previous mini-sode, but there's a community called Love Thy Nerd, which is a community driven by Christian moderators that basically is like, they give you a place where you can hang out and talk about any sort of nerd topics, you know, whether it be video games, board games, movies, you know, whether you're like a Star Trek fan or a Doctor Who fan or, you know, whatever fandom you are into, it gives you a place where you can just like hang out and talk without kind of like the controversy and the judgment and stuff like that. And it's super cool. You know, it's just like, it's a fun space where you can go talk to people without so much of like the really, really crazy like trolls and just really mean people, I guess, is the easiest way to put it. You know, it's not, I mean, you know, you still have people there that'll, you know, you'll get teased, you know, they have fun, but it's not like, it's not one of those where you go and talk about something you like and they tell you to go jump in a hole and die. You know, it's like, they might tease you the way like a friend would tease you, you know, it's just, it's a good, fun, clean space to kind of just go hang out and talk to like-minded people. Which is, you know, in different terms, it's kind of like what everybody wants, you know? That's why some people like make their small groups on Facebook. Some people make like little circles of friends that they meet like at a bar or whatever, you know, they're always looking for those, that group of people that they can hang out with without being like judged or ridiculed, you know? And it's just a good group of people. But anyway, so I wanted to give them a quick shout out because one of the things I did this week was I just tossed it out there. I just posted in the Love Thy Nerd community saying, you know, like, hey, my buddy and I run a podcast, and if you guys have any questions that you'd like us to ask, we'd love to ask them, and, you know, we'll shoot you guys a link to the video. Mm-hmm. And we got three back, three good ones.
I have not seen the questions.
He hasn't even seen them.
I didn't know we had them, so.
But, so I've got these set, and I was going to read them out. This one is probably mostly going to be me, but I'm interested to see if you have any input about
it. Sure, absolutely.
The first question is from Mark Davis. He asked, I do all kinds of board game questions. How about this? What's the most unique and innovative board game that you've ever played? Do you have a lot of experience with board games?
Candyland.
The most unique game you've ever played.
Honestly, you know, this would be a Tyler thing because, you know, he's the board game. I don't have a lot of experience with board games. I mean, I'm always willing to sit down and learn how to play, you know, with a group of friends. You know, we're not doing anything else. It's just a matter of getting a big group together like you get with your brothers and everyone. So you have that. And, you know, my sister's my sister's husband, my brother-in-law is big into board games. You know, his side is, you know, there may be a weekend or something where I get over with them, but in terms of, do I have a diverse, you know, I know basic board games. I know Candyland, you know, Chutes and Ladders. I mean, I know Golden Kittens, Stratego. Mm-hmm. I know Sorry. Obviously, when the Power Rangers one comes out, that one I'm very much looking forward to sitting down and learning how to play.
So, considering the traditional games you play, that's probably going to be your most unique game.
Pretty much. Let's say Stratego, because that one's actually not a kid's game.
Yeah.
It's not a super adult game, but it's not meant like for Candyland Chutes and Ladders.
Okay.
So that's me. So I'll let Tyler take this one.
One thing that I really liked about Time Stories when I first got it, and Time Stories is kind of an easy cop-out answer, because that made a huge splash when it first came out for being kind of a unique thing, like a really accessible but different experience.
Right.
But one thing I liked about that was just how it was really easy to learn, but it was also really deep and complex. And it was most, you know, it relied a lot on having a good group to play with. And so one thing that I liked was, even inside the box, you would find hidden things. Mm-hmm. So you pulled out the components and you would start playing, and then the game might tell you to like look here in the box, and you'd find like a hidden component that you didn't even realize. And it would like introduce new things that you didn't even realize were in the box to begin with and stuff like that. And I loved that aspect of it. I'm trying to think of like the most unique, something that you don't normally see. I really liked Tragedy Looper. It was one that I just played a week or two ago, and I mentioned it in our last episode real quick. It's got this cool like anime aesthetic, and you kind of want to think like Clue or something like that when you're playing it.
Right.
But one thing that I thought was really interesting was certain characters were locked out of certain locations. So, you know, in Clue, it's like you have to figure out who did it and where they did it and when, you know, so on and so forth. In Tragedy Looper, there are certain characters... The core concept is you're moving characters around this grid and you're trying to keep a murder from happening. And if you lose, then time rolls back and you have to try again. That's why it's called Tragedy Looper. But there are certain areas where characters can't go to.
Right.
So not only are you trying to move characters and keep them from getting killed, you also have to keep in mind the places on the board where they can move to. And the mastermind, like a dungeon master in this game, is also moving characters and trying to manipulate them. But it's all face down. And then it all happens at once. So the protagonists play their cards, the antagonist plays their card. And then they flip their cards. And a character might say to, like, we might say to move a character up. But then the dungeon master said to move the character to the left. And it might turn out that they can't do that because that would lead them to an incompatible space and that would have its own consequences. And I felt like that mechanic of kind of like the secret cards and having like distinct places where they could and couldn't go and the consequences of those actions, that was really cool to me. It's stressful and it creates a challenge, but that was really cool to me the first time I played it. So I liked that a lot. Mansions of Madness started something that's not as unique or innovative anymore, but Mansions of Madness was one of the first like really good examples of integrating technology into a board game.
Okay.
So instead of having like a traditional dungeon master, Mansions of Madness is all played, you have your board and your figures and you move around, but then an app that you can pull up on your phone, your tablet, your computer, whatever, tells you what happens whenever you move to new areas and stuff like that. So it takes all like the finicky, there's no, you know, you don't have these giant hardbound rule books or, you know, these periods where you're like sitting there flipping through trying to find some obscure rule that you missed whenever you were learning the game. You know, it's all done through the app. The app tells you the consequences of your actions and kind of delegates the rules and things like that. And so I really liked... I really liked the technology integration of Mansions of Madness when I first started. And now you're seeing it more and more. And they actually, one of their other games, it's a skirmish game called Imperial Assault. It's a Star Wars game. And they actually upgraded that game to support an app. They made an app for that game that you can actually use with your existing copy of Imperial Assault instead of buying like a new upgraded copy. And I thought that was cool too. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily as unique or innovative anymore. But at the time it came out, I remember thinking that is super cool. And so I'd say Time Stories is kind of like a little bit of a cliche answer because that was kind of renowned when it came out for doing like unique things. So my thought would probably be Mansions of Madness just because that was the one where I kind of like geeked out about it whenever I saw how it was integrated with the technology. Even though it's less innovative now, I really liked it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, there are a lot of games that do unique or innovative things that end up becoming less unique because they get adopted by other games as people find out how cool they are.
Absolutely.
But that's the one that always stuck with me was I remember just that like geek out moment the first time I played Mansions of Madness and I was like playing the game on the board, but also basically watching it like play out on the screen. I thought that was super cool.
Different.
Yeah. All right.
So we got two more.
Next question.
Yes. Let's hear it.
What is the most valuable real life lesson you've learned from a video game?
Ooh. I'll take this one first since you just had your moment.
Okay. Yeah, you go.
Most valuable. Man. You see, that one could go all over. You know, I could definitely name some TV shows that have taught me a lot, or you know, I'd say have taught me a lot. Like you could say Yu-Gi-Oh, you could say Pokemon, you could say Digimon. For video games, I mean, I've said the Batman Arkham series. You know, those were fantastic to just keep fighting against the Joker, who was pretty much just crazy in general. But you know, that one's actually pretty tough for a video game standpoint. You know, I played so many great stories of games. Like, obviously, my favorite game of all time, Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. You know, those have taught a lot on how to play, how to think. The Legend of Zelda series, the Mario Brothers series have always taught you something. That one's just kind of an open-ended question to me where I don't even know if I have a direct answer for that one.
Can I tell you what my thought?
What is your thought? Maybe that'll kind of jumpstart my head a little bit.
So, and again, this is going to kind of call back to, you know, the games that I like to talk about a lot. But for me, it was games with, like, moral choices. So...
Like the Infamous series or something like that?
I was going to say, like, most distinctly, probably the Fable series.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
you can see right over here. But also, like, the Dragon Age games, the Mass Effect games, games like that. Even, like, Knights of the Old Republic and Jade Empire. They show you, they give you the choice to be a really moral character or a really immoral character. But it also shows you the distinct impact that those choices have on your story and on your character.
Absolutely.
And I think it can be kind of an eye-opening thing whenever you play through a game, especially if you play through it more than once, whenever you take a game like Knights of the Old Republic or Mass Effect or Fable, and you play as a good guy and then as a bad guy or vice versa, and you realize just how differently these games play out and how it affects them, not just as far as their story, but also physically. Whenever, you know, you see these characters, you know, so, like in Star Wars, you might see, like, their face goes, like, all gray and ashen, and you might see, like, cracks that are filled in with, like, dark force and stuff like that. Or in Fable, where you would, like, grow horns and your eyes would go red, things like that, you know. It can be kind of like an eye-opening prospect where you realize just the importance of making good decisions in your real life. It shows you kind of like the picture of Dorian Gray. It's a physical manifestation of the good or bad choices that you've made in your life. And so I think those can be a really effective way of kind of showing you, not just in the game, but also they can be kind of eye-opening in your life about, you know, I should maybe think about the decisions I'm making.
I see that too, and Infamous is the same way for PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4. Those types of games, you know, you can play good or bad, which obviously is... interesting. It's like a choose your own adventure book type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I could agree with that. I can agree with your choices there with that one. For me though, it's still open ended. I try to think of games like that where you can make your choices, as well as other ones where you kind of see, like, a character grow, or, you know, I mean, actually I'll even use Tomb Raider, the Tomb Raider for PS3, not mm-hmm. the very first one. You know, obviously this isn't a spoiler thing, it's been out forever, so if you haven't played it, I'm sorry. So at the beginning of the game, when you're starting to learn how to play, or not really learn how to play, but when Lara's, you know, getting into her adventure, she just has a pistol in her hand and she's literally, like, shaking, trying to hold it. Whereas near the end of the game, you get a rocket launcher, or you get one of those old ones, a bus kicks down a door, and, you know, like, the enemies are just like, oh crap, here she comes. And then she says, like, this really kick butt line. That's right, you, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to tell you, go back and bleep it. And it's like, I'm coming for you. And you just watch the progression of this scared girl from this journey who's shaking hold this little pistol to, all right, you're gonna get hurt now.
Yeah.
So that would be something I would say. Mm-hmm. And for our final question.
And that was a solid question. I like that question a lot.
I like that one.
That came from, I hope I'm saying this right, Jeshua Horka. I liked that one a lot.
Yes.
And our third question is from Kyle Matthews. And I think this one was kind of a troll question, but I'm going to try my best to at least...
we're going
to
do everything
reason
we can.
It out with you. And I don't know if you can even answer this. This might be on me again, but you can join in. You can have some fun. Why was The Last Jedi the greatest movie ever?
All right, I'm done.
And then he said, take your time.
I enjoy Star Wars.
Did you watch The Last Jedi?
I have not watched The Last Jedi.
You haven't seen it?
Okay. No. So, I mean, we could spoil it. I don't care. I enjoyed the original 4, 5, and 6. I enjoyed 1, 2, and 3. Not as much as 4, 5, and 6. But I'm not super angry like the hardcore Star Wars fans like Tyler is. And you know, I've got some other fans who just pretty much do anything they can to think that 1, 2, and 3 don't exist. That's a cool shadow in the back there. I like it. Sorry, I get distracted. So, Answer that when you can in like 2 or 3 minutes, says I got nothing.
Okay, so my thought is, I'm not necessarily going to argue why it's the greatest movie. I could.
It's a movie.
I think the first half of The Last Jedi was a really, really good movie. Probably like one of my favorite Star Wars movies. If it was just the first half of The Last Jedi. Mostly just because it was so strange and like in a wonderful way. It was so like beautifully weird. It kind of took what you know about Star Wars and kind of, you know, tossed it to the wind. And I really, really adored that. Because there was just like all this weirdness going on. Like you go to this island where Luke Skywalker is. And it's just like, it kind of just doesn't care what you think about, you know, the previous Star Wars movies. And it just has these kind of like weird things happen. One really significant point that I think if you've seen it, you kind of know where I'm going already. But since you haven't, this will be kind of like a fun thing for you. So like there's a part where she goes on like this trek with him across the island. And it turns out he's just going to like this giant alien beast. And he milks the beast and then just straight up drinks the milk, just standing there, like straight from the nipple of this giant alien. And it's just there. It doesn't necessarily have a significant point to the plot. It just kind of happens because it's fun, you know? And then there are these moments where he didn't necessarily break character, but Luke Skywalker kind of has these moments where he's like messing with Rey and... Mm-hmm. That, you know, he probably wouldn't have done whenever he was this, like, annoying, whiny kid in, A New Hope. But, you know, it's kind of like a unique, a very unique film for a Star Wars movie up until he decides to go and help them.
Okay.
Whenever he changes his mind and decides to go and help, it feels like just another Star Wars.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I think that's where it lost it for me, was for the first half, when it's Rey and Luke on the island, I thought that that was just a glorious thing. I thought this was going to be like a game-changing moment for the Star Wars franchise. And then whenever it started feeling like just another Star Wars to me, that's whenever it started kind of bumming me out, because I realized it wasn't going to set itself apart and make itself as unique as I wanted it to. And so I think, obviously, you know, I get kind of like the humor in the question, you know, why was it the greatest movie of all time? The first half, I think, probably would have been my favorite Star Wars movie, probably one of the best Star Wars things to happen. But the second half kind of brought it back into safe territory.
Absolutely.
It made it feel like, you know, oh, wait, this is also Star Wars, so we have to just please the fans, too. And I think once you got into kind of like the fan service territory and just kind of the you know, let's make it another Star Wars, that's where it stopped being the greatest movie for me. But if you wanted me to argue why it was the greatest movie of all time, it's because of the alien milking scene.
There you go.
That's what I've got for you.
So I haven't seen it. I'll have to sit down and Redbox it or on demand it or something. Because again, you know, I'm a casual Star Wars fan, so it doesn't exactly break my heart that I haven't seen it yet or someone spoils it. It's like, all right, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we had some solid questions, so hopefully on episode 10.
There is also, I think, The Last Jedi got the biggest laugh out of me out of any Star Wars movie. Which, you know, I don't go into Star Wars movies thinking, man, this is going to be hilarious. But The Last Jedi was surprisingly funny. But the biggest laugh I've ever gotten out of a Star Wars movie was, and this is going to kind of go into spoiler territory. It's not going to spoil any plot points, but it is going to spoil, like, just a specific scene that doesn't necessarily have any big bearing on the film overall, but just a heads up. There's a scene where he's trying to teach Rey in the ways of the Force. And she's trying to, like, lift a rock, and she can't, but he tells her to, like, close her eyes and imagine that, you know, she can lift a rock and try to make it rise. And he's standing behind her, and he starts, like, making fun of her. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, wow, you're doing it! You must be really strong in the Force! And he's, like, just standing behind her making fun of her while she's trying to use the Force. And, you know, maybe it wasn't as funny to other people, but for me, that was just, like, the most hilarious thing.
That seems like
I thought that was awesome. And so that, too, that was also one of my reasons why it's the best movie ever.
So, well, I mean, there you go. Hopefully that'll answer your question from at least one of us.
So if you watch this, Jeshua, that is why... Mm-hmm. The Last Jedi is the greatest movie ever made because of those two unique sequences that I enjoyed more than the other sequences from the film.
Absolutely. So anyway, guys, I think that's all we have for this episode, for episode 9. Thank you again so much for watching. Follow us on Facebook,
yes.
Instagram, Twitter, subscribe on YouTube, follow mm-hmm. us on iTunes, anywhere you can go and get all of your podcast needs. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, maybe with a guest star, you never know,
maybe
for episode 10. And we'll see you guys then. So, guys, thanks a lot. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.